Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
Friday, that tune was La 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 Means I Love You by one of our previous guests, L.B. Reynolds of the Delphonics, you know, so I love that old tunes. But tonight we got my brother by a different mother back on here, Chad Meek, and he is going to talk more about UFOs as well as discuss USOs. You know, this God is a bona fide truth. You know, the government knows it's real. A lot of people like me and other believers know UFOs are real, you know, but the government sometimes, I think, are trying to keep it on a down low, and I don't understand why. But before I bring on Chad, I want to say hello to my co-host, Mark and Tris. How you doing?
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hey, now.
Yeah.
Hey,
so, it's good to have Chad here. So, I'm going to ask Chad to say hello to our listening audience. And we're broadcasting in 27 countries. So, make your plea. Get it out there, darling. Say what you need to say before we start bombarding you with questions.
Sister Terry.
That's my girl.
All right. Hey, hello to all of my dear friend Terry's wonderful audience and listeners out there. Happy to be here once again. It's really a fantastic time every time I get on the show because, like she said, we are brother and sister from a different mother. Who knows? They may have been a UFO mother somewhere. It's kind of dropping.
You never know. We connected, darling.
So, yeah, you know, you never know. You know, this is the odd thing about this crazy world. So, anyway.
Yes.
So, yeah, so glad to be here, Terry. And, yeah, I have a book out, too. You know, I'm not as prolific writer as you, Terry. In fact, I'm struggling on the second one. And, boy, I tell you what, I need all the inspiration because I got the perspiration going, but I need more inspiration and to finish this year.
If you need help, just call me. You know, I can
I will. I mean, you know, because I tell you what.
I can make it easier for you, too. Just call me.
I will, dear. Thank you so much. It's so generous of you. Yeah. So, yeah, anyways, we're doing a lot of things. Number one, we're trying to put together a movie, and we've kind of had some interesting things going on with that. You know, right now there's a big move, big push for funding movies through Bitcoin. And I have an attorney out in Tampa, and there's some developers and what have you that want to kind of jump on board with us and literally, you know, do a major funding. Now, of course, the amount of money that I've been looking for, and I would not settle for less than $40 million, has been just a big, gigantic bar to reach and all the technical stuff. And you can imagine how difficult it would be to fund anything in this day and age. But we're getting a lot of interest. The developers in the whole Bitcoin community are extremely excited about the project. So anyways, we've got a nice big breath of fresh air. And, you know, I've gone to the mountain three times. And literally, I mean, you know, I almost got the check and then was sent back down with no check. And let me tell you something, Terry, I'll have to confess, you get a little depressed.
I know. You're that close to making that dream reality. And what people don't understand is this is not just no movie that's about some fictitious stuff you made up in your mind. This is real facts. You got receipts. You know, and I think the government is trying to suppress that from coming out indirectly. You might not even realize they might have their finger on suppressing it because they don't want the news to get out there that UFOs are real. I don't know why they think everybody is stupid. We don't know that all these sightings all over the world. Come on now, everybody ain't crazy.
You know, Tara, you hit the nail on the head because the narrative is so critical. And, you know, one of the things, now, whether it's been a blessing or a curse, and like anything, it's probably both. I was kind of inducted in this whole world, and I ran from it most of my life. I mean, I'm telling you, Terry, it just, you know, it was just too weird for most people's, you know, sensibilities, you know, growing up and trying to explain the experiences that my uncle and my whole entire family had out in this remote area called Giant Rock out in the middle of nowhere, out in the desert. I might as well have been in Siberia, you know. But they, you know, uh, but, And after a while, here's a little snapshot. I'm sitting around and you know, we're having a few beers. I'm drinking with some friends. I'm about 17 years old, and my uncle comes on television, and you know, my friends go, "Oh wow, this is so neat. This is what a trip." And what did I do? I just sat there like a deaf mute. I did not want to go there. I did not want to say, well, you know, I can tell a little bit. But, you know, since then, I've kind of grown into it. And literally, I celebrate my whole, you know, experience. It's my life, and it's been my experience. And so, you know, sharing it is really a great thing that I've been able to do. But let me tell you something. If you've had the experience I've had, I actually identify with a lot of pilots and what have you, it shakes you out. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, I remember you telling me about your event with your, I believe it was your grandson. And you know,
yeah,
these
I was
things,
on
thinking
that's one of those expensive flashlights from Home Depot they pay a lot of money for, and you can see miles away.
Yeah.
And I'm flashing up the sky zigzag, and we saw that thing moving with the flashlight. I said, let's get the hell up in the house right now. Let's go, let's go. So I was done. And they remember it clearly.
That's true.
Yes.
Well, you know, it leaves an impact on you, because generally we're fed like children here, especially in the United States, like with pablum. We don't get the information. We don't get the facts. And if we get anything, it's generally dated. Dated, I mean, literally years and years and years from the actual event. So we lose a lot of the context as far as some of these events that have occurred. Now, but if they happen to you, I mean, as far as in your own reality, first of all, it shatters it. It challenges every one of your beliefs. If you come in contact either with an actual extraterrestrial or a spaceship, it shatters your individual reality. I mean, it changes your perception. And so that's what they're fearful of, because the government has always, from the early 30s, have been worried about this mass chaos, and that people will stop, you know, paying taxes and you know, and fueling the industrial military complex. And so they want to keep everyone in a box. They want to keep your minds in a box. And yes, I think I've been psychically attacked, you know, from this thing from the beginning, because I've ran into some really demonic people that weren't even necessarily bad, but once they got involved with this, they literally turned into demons. I had one close friend who was an actor, and he literally turned into an animal. And I was really just a vicious animal. And it was over one thing. And actually another person was working on the project early on. I just made a comment, and I said, okay, well, they were monkeying around with the script, and I said, well, you know, this line here is, I just said it was pure, you know, I don't know what kind of word I should use, but you know, it was a drug. It was, you know, my bad. I said this is pure poop, but there's another word for it. And I tell you what, yeah. Well, and we had probably 8 to 12 people working on this, and within that whole, within a matter of hours, there was a raging fire that went on with the project. And literally, I mean, a few of them actually attacked me, and did stuff, some outrageous stuff. Like, for instance, this is the dark side of this whole thing too, and it's good that you bring it up, because I seldom don't want to talk about it, but there is a flip side to all this joy, and that is, you know, this thing is powerful. This whole movie is going to change a lot of minds. It's going to actually take charge of the narrative. Now, granted, Giant Rock is, it's based on actual events, but really, what's more important is the narrative. You know as well as I do, as a storyteller and writer, you have the power of the narration and of the story, and people get really, especially powers that be with storytellers. Now, Stalin, incidentally, his biggest enemies were filmmakers. He rounded all the filmmakers up and had them killed. So, you know, so it's been, this has been a long, long time. And not to get too, you know, in the paranoia or what do you call it, the conspiracy theorists, et cetera, world. Mm-hmm. But I have actually felt it. And I mean, what's so bizarre is that, you know, this is really, you know, this has been a real challenge as far as to move this forward. But there's nobody or no thing going to get in my way of getting this thing made. I mean, I don't,
exactly.
Hell, you know, hell can freeze. I don't care. I'm doing this, Terry.
I don't blame you, but you know, Chad, you know, even the government, you can go on YouTube and you can see the date where alien craft flew around the White House. That's documented. That's on YouTube. You can see that. That's news. The Blue Book, which was a secret book, document alien declassified. So it's proof that they were here, are here.
Yep.
We need to open our eyes and get ready. But see, like the president, they seem to think that if we knew, then it's going to be people going crazy, running out in the streets. We need to know. So if they come and they're hostile, we know how to get ready, whether it's build bunkers, whether it's get our stuff together, our weapons, you know, try to fight this thing if they ain't coming for the right reasons. Because I've heard through just my own research, there are some called the Graves, there are some reptilian, you know, there's all different kinds, and some are not for us. I heard that the Graves was for helping us protect the earth because against the nuclear weapons and stuff. And the other ones, they want to use us for a food source. So, you know, we need to know. And the government needs to tell the truth. That's what we pay them for. We get tired of them lying and digging into our pockets. Tell the truth about this other stuff that we need to know.
Sure. You know, my uncle identified about 105 different alien species. Ranging
wow.
from, oh yeah, so there, I mean, there's quite a bit, and it's, you know, quite a bit of out there. The majority of them are friendly, and they're benevolent. They really are the majority. But as you mentioned, there are some extremely dangerous, alien species, and and really we need to know. And the other thing too is, I mean, hello, everyone pays, you know, usually pay taxes one time in their life or another.
Right.
Bottom line is, it's our money and it's our information. You know, there's a big thing on Facebook. I'm kind of laughing. I told everyone, you know, they said, okay, we're gonna, you know, rush Area 51. Well, you know, first of all, why is there an Area 51? Why don't we have access to that? Now, the Air Force General has been warning people that it's not going to be good if you try it. And I guess there's 600,000 people that are going to, you know, storm the gates at Area 51. I told them all. I said, listen, I said, count me in when you get to 2 million.
Okay.
I want a little bit more
they're
numbers.
They're going to kill y'all off.
I know.
But you know, Chad, he got a question he's been dying to ask you. So I'm going to let Mark ask his question first.
Well, I was just thinking as you were talking, Chad, that here in San Diego, yesterday, Comic-Con opened. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could rent, you know, get a booth there, you know, plastered with Big Rock and have all the movers and shakers and studios. Everybody who's anybody in Hollywood is in San Diego till through the weekend.
I know. I've been sitting there. You're right. And, oh, gosh, I would love, L-O-V-E, love to be there and basically have a booth and literally maybe actually have an actual giant rock inside of there where people could come in and kind of experience something, build that and literally, you know, have some fun there, because you're right. That is the premier place right now to launch a lot of, theatrical, you know, projects. The problem is, my friend, unless you, we've kind of did this, we bootstrapped this thing here. We originally got about $90,000 a week, you know, when we first started, but since then, we have not had any additional money come in on this thing here. So the budget for that kind of thing, which you can imagine, San Diego, Comic-Con, how much money that costs, it'd be a big budget. So, Mark, you know what? I think it's a fantastic idea, and I'm going to expect your check here very soon, because I think you are a brilliant. I think you are a genius.
Maybe I'll build you a small Integratron or something.
Did y'all notice how I kind of wormed my way into that? I'm getting a little bit more sharper now, huh?
Yeah, well, Chris, he has a question as well. Go ahead, Chris, darling.
Yeah. Hello, Chad. My name is Chris Michael Ward. My question is, until you get this movie made, which you know, and hopefully one day you do, because every story needs told. How do you bring income into your? How do you support yourself?
Well, I'm an extremely handsome man, and so I go out on dates. And if it's $50 per kiss, and so
not.
That's
wow.
His wife will beat him, beat his tail. He lied.
I mean, I'll do anything to make a film. They say if you want to make a movie, you better learn to kiss a lot of frogs.
But won't be not a princess being transformed.
That's right.
I don't kick a lot of toads myself.
No, first of all, one of the reasons to answer your question is one of the, I was in the energy business, and so I've had a small amount of, small retirement from that, and my wife has her retirement also, so. And we also live in Mexico right now, which is extremely cost effective. I mean, I could not survive in San Diego or the worst side of Los Angeles, with the amount of money that we have, coming in. So it's been a struggle, but we've kept our, we just kept our faith, and it's those things, if you believe it or not. Now I've been offered, jobs. I used to run oil and gas and mining companies all over the world. So it's not like, I couldn't go get a job, doing something like that. But that's just not where my heart is, and this is where my heart is, and I have to do this. And it's almost like I have a whole generation of family members that are in the other world that are pushing me on, and I literally, this is like the army. I can't quit until I get it done.
I believe that with faith and tenacity, don't quit. I think it will happen, because I think we're on the verge right now of all those secret things coming to light. There's too many people who have been, exposed to it, from airline pilots to people who worked at NASA to people who were there when they found some debris from down spaceships. There's too many people that's having a hard time, containing that information, that eventually the government is going to have to be honest. And the only thing I can think of, why not tell us? Because they're using the spaceships and the materials on these crash sites, and they're going backwards to recreate some of the technology they didn't know about. And so they're sitting there worrying about who can get faster to building weapons or this before some other nation. That's why I think it's a secret. It ain't to benefit the people. I think it's to benefit the country, because they want to be the most powerful. They want to have this. They want to have that. And forget our opinion, But like you said, we the people put you in office, but we won't take you out of office. Somebody got to be honest.
Yeah. Well, also too, I've had I've had major actors come to me and say, hey, when you get a budget, I'd love to be involved in your project. Then also too, organically, at any day, I could see where, as far as hits on Google for Giant Rock the movie, type it in, it runs from anywhere from, 200 to 300 million to up to a billion imprints. So people are watching this thing. It's just that once we get a budget and once we get this thing made, and trust me, it's going to be good and powerful. This thing will be a gigantic hit, and we can actually create the equivalent of a Hollywood tentpole with sequels and various things here. This is the stakes are extremely high. And again, sometimes you have to go through hell to get to heaven. And you know, I'm okay with that, you know. So we've got the juice. You know, we have the juice. There, I mean, listen, Giant Rock the movie, just type it in and you'll see it. It's like, okay. So there's all these impressions on Google and go on to Bing or whatever, you know, all these different searches. Everyone, you know, is involved in the story. So it's been growing organically, and I've just been keeping the flame going. But yeah, I've gone, like I said, I went up the mountain a few times, and I've seen the greed, you know, when people, you know, when they go into negotiations as far as this stuff. So I know I have something of immense intrinsic value as far as this. And nobody can tell me, and Terry, you'll probably have to vouch for this too, there's nothing more powerful than a story. And a well-articulated story.
Amen.
Yeah, it is. It's really what it is. You know, and everyone says, you know, and in Hollywood and everyone, the first thing they want to do is they want to stamp out the creator. They want to stamp out the whole initial concept. They want to basically industrialize the story. And what happens is, like, for instance, like, you know, with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon with their story, when they came out with, their movie, what the hell it was called, that they did when they first came out, they both got screenwriting credit. It wasn't their story after they brought it to Hollywood. So, anyway, that was their biggest complaint. You know, it wasn't their, what was it, show with Robin Williams. You might help my memory here. I'm at a loss here. What the hell is that show called?
Goodwill Hunting?
Goodwill Hunting. Yeah, Goodwill Hunting. I'm listening to Matt Damon. He goes, and Ben Affleck, they were talking. He goes, well, it's a great movie, but it wasn't our movie.
Wow, ain't that ugly?
Which that happens, you know, and you get kind of – yeah, So one of the things, too, as far as this, is I've had offers to buy the screenplay, which means buy the intellectual property and then tell me to get the hell out. That's not going to happen. I mean, I'd rather eat dirt than basically have somebody basically take control. I had a Chinese people that came to a meeting in Shanghai, and they came in and said, hey, we want to buy your screenplay, and they were going to give me a pretty good amount of money, walking away money. And I go, well, who's going to direct this thing? And they said, well, we are going to direct it. I said, well, who? And they said, well, we can't tell you that. And I said, well, when you can tell me that, maybe we can have a conversation. And so they flew their jet out to L.A. and I went there and it was a really positive thing. But here's the great thing about that whole meeting. One of the guys who spoke English, I asked him, I said, well, why would you guys even want a film like this? Why would you even want to be involved in something like this? And the one guy said the most intelligent thing I heard, he says, a piece of Americana, which this is an American story, this is a gigantic part, this is the new Western. He says, people all over the world are intrigued by Western Americana, and this is what this is. We're talking about, you know, going from 1947.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, you know what? That's the most intelligent thing I've heard, and you know what? It's true, because all along, everybody, in fact, in China, if I just having this conversation with a gentleman, a friend of mine from China, he says they don't really like their own movies. What they want to see is our movies. And the whole world wants to see our movies. That's one of the things that we pursue. The power of the story, power of the storyteller. I mean, but it has to be done right. And I'm not going to let – you know, it's not just about money. Sure, listen, I want to make a lot of money because, you know, I want to take all you people out to Giant Rock. Or I want to be able to send
right.
a jet out to Terry. I want to go. I want to do this. I literally want to have a lot of fun with that. I need money to do it. So, anyways, I'll get there. You know, we'll get there. So.
Yeah. Well, Mark has been dying to ask this question about your uncle. So, Mark,
okay.
Go ahead. You know, Chris.
Well, before I do, wasn't Philip Seymour Hoffman slated to play your uncle George Van Tassel, or what happened with that? Well, he died, of course.
Well, yeah, he died. There was we've had some. Like Chris Christopherson, he had signed up early. Tom Sizemore, you know, Yeah, he I love him as an actor. He's fantastic, but I don't know. I mean, he's had a lot of personal problems. But there were other actors that I can't mention because their agents made me sign that were really, I mean some big ones. And one of them you might have mentioned, but I can't really I'm still precluded from because my non-disclosure with them, because while we were negotiating that. But I mean it's been unbelievable. I mean it really is. And people contact me, I go, well, who are you? And then I think it's a joke, I always say, well, I'm agent of so-and-so. And I think, yeah, hey, Bill, get stop bothering me. I know it's you. I mean, it's so weird because, I'm sitting there, I got my hands on my face, and I get a call from this, agent from this major star, and I think, oh, yeah, we'd like to see your screenplay. I think, get the out of here. I know people. It's like, anyways, I've had that happen. I've literally had that happen. But anyways, there it is. But yeah, so it's been it's been an interesting road. It really has. I mean, I have, also too. I mean, I've been, tested by fire as far as my tenacity and all that stuff. But let me tell you something. It is the most bizarre, crazy world. And it even here's another little story too. I was very successful. I had mines in Alaska. I had mines in the former Bosnia. I had mines in Nevada, and I had these two women contact me and from San Diego, and they had asked me to come out and talk to me about my uncle's ministry, which originally his whole thing was set up, as a nonprofit ministry type, situation, College of Universal Wisdom. As far as that, so anyways, I said, and I said, well, sure, I thought they were going to ask me for a donation. Well, I get out there, and they're very brilliant. I mean, just really sharp attack in their early 70s. And so I'm sitting there in a hotel room talking with these two women. They said, the best thing you could ever do is reinstate some of your uncle's works and get the people around this thing so we could change the whole world, for a better place. And I looked at him. I had that, like that deer in a headlight, moment. This is in 1999. And I go, I don't think I'm that guy. I don't think I can do it. I said, but I'll help you. I'll give you some money to, He said, no. We've talked to their sources. They say, you are the man to do this. And I go, I don't think so. I said, I'm kind of happy right now, et cetera, et cetera. And they go, no. And so this is my way of essentially, kind of facilitating their wishes and their belief that I was the person that should resurrect this thing here. And, I started a couple of Facebook things. There's been a couple things, Giant Rock the Movement. And really, Giant Rock the Movement is essentially just a movement to basically get people to a higher consciousness place in their minds and what have you, and bring some of this stuff out and gather resources together so we can actually have some sort of power base, et cetera, and have a stake in this whole thing. So, that's the idea. But then again, I thought, okay, well, everyone has donor fatigue, et cetera. So I thought, okay, there's a story here, and this thing is gonna. And if I said it once, I said it a thousand times. This is a billion-dollar franchise. The movie will provide all the resources we need to get out there and to make this thing happen. Because the best thing you can do is don't tell me, show me. And that's the thing about movies.
Right.
So that's the direction I'm doing as far as his ministry and his legacy. And incidentally, that man has haunted me to this day. I mean, the reason I'm talking to you folks right now is because my uncle, in that whatever world he's in, I mean, he has always been contacting me, and sometimes it's damn annoying, because it's like, I keep going.
Yeah, because I want you to continue his work.
Right, well, yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, that's a summary of, as far as that whole thing. But anyway, I didn't want to get. I knew you had another question there somewhere, but I'm sorry. I get carried away. I apologize.
No problem. Well, Mark, I ask you a question, then I'm gonna go to Chris.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole movie itself is going to tell the story of your uncle, and meeting the Venusians and all of that in 1953, the year I was born, by the way. What else is it going to talk? What else is going to be in the movie?
Well,
envision it.
Yeah. Well, really, in many respects, I call my characters reluctant messiahs. And my uncle was a reluctant messiah. He had information that nobody else had, but he did not want to come out, and say all this stuff that he knew and what have you. But it was kind of forced on him by this Council of Seven Lights. There was actually ethereal bodies that actually chased him into doing this. And literally, I mean, as far as he had a poem one time, and he goes, please don't make me do this. This is one of his challenge sessions. And they go, yeah. They said, hey, they'll ruin me. The government, they'll come out. I'll be the laughing stock of the world. And everyone says, and so this ethereal body says, listen, if you love the universe, you love God, then you need to do this. He goes, no, I want to do it. He says, it'll ruin me. So essentially, they're told him baloney. They said, that's all. That's your problem. You need to do this. And so he was very reluctant. He was very reluctant to do this. Now he was the number two man at one of his best friends, which I actually sat down and ate eggs and pancakes with at the restaurant, was Howard Hughes. Now, Howard Hughes funded a lot of the early research, had gave, especially on the Integraton and what have you. But Howard Hughes was a frequent visitor out at Giant Rock. So he was no slouch, or my uncle, he was the go-to guy whenever there was a problem out there. So his whole background was in aerospace. So, so this is a gigantic, being essentially a UFO minister, I guess, would be what you'd call it, or whatever, what he was doing. It was a huge stretch, and he did not want to do this. So I like the – so when you ask as far as some of the snapshot of the character, he's related. And then the other part is not just the various sightings and the various activities that were going on out there, and especially the conventions. It was the persecution. He was put on Eisenhower's most dangerous persons list, okay? So, you have that whole thing. No, they were serious. Now, my uncle was a man also too. First we got to confess, he was not a god. He was just a man, a very vulnerable man with a lot of weaknesses. Okay, first of all, I'm just I have to get that out there. And because of his, he was charismatic. The women loved him. And my poor suffering Aunt Eva, had to endure a lot. But also what happened was the FBI had tapped him, and they had literally had, they would do stuff like send photographs, to my Aunt Eva, all this stuff.
Oh, he was trying to create problems for your uncle.
Oh, yes. So, that's in there, too. But also, too, there's a whole litany of interactions. Like, for instance, he was a frequent guest of the Lon John Neville Show, which was the number one show across the country, especially during the 50s. Long John Neville would have him on a regular basis, and along with Jackie Gleason and you name all the celebrities, and they would talk about UFOs during that time period. So his interaction with his friend Long John Neville, it was interesting. And then we have, various scenes where, like for instance with George Adamski, and one of the non-supporters of him, except he went out to the convention about I think twice, and but he had absolutely rebuffed all the whole UFO community. George Adamski had done that, and he did not like my uncle, and we found out, and I got with another guy who had a lot of information on that too. So But anyway, the process, I talked to people like Gabriel Green and a lot of the major movers and shakers during this early UFO epicenter, you know, and so I got to talk with them and figure, well, what were you guys trying to do? And what their biggest thing was is that they were the first non-nuclear group that was anti-nuclear that actually knew through my uncle's channeling, they actually knew what it was doing to our environment. And what their biggest thing was, he says, yes, we are nervous about what's doing to your environment here as far as these nuclear testing and what have you. But what you're also doing is you're really screwing with parallel universes, which, you know, my God, back in those days, no one knew squat about a parallel universe. Now it's scientifically proven that literally that we were destroying parallel universes through these nuclear blasts or terror. So anyways, they all come together. They're all come together. They're all basically saying, hey, we need to do something to make the people aware of really what we're doing to ourselves. Well, you know, of course, also too, Howard Hughes knew firsthand also because his one of on his set was out in Nevada that they were there. Hell, all the people in that movie ended up dying of cancer. So, so there was firsthand knowledge going on. So, what I just take everyone through the whole thing, as far as some of the more memorable spots that I deemed necessary. But they're so colorful. Oh my gosh! I mean, that's the most intriguing. I get really excited because the characters were so real and so colorful, and this was not about money. Nobody had any kind of. It was not about cash. So I'm just this little puff out there running around there from 4 to 8, talking to all these 10,000 people, out there. And I'm telling you, it was a huge experience, and it left an indelible imprint on my mind. So I I'm actually a part of the story, too. And I there's a character named Chase that I included in there because I had to get him in there because, and you talk about a weird experience. I'd gotten writer's block, and literally I had a voice come from somewhere, and it was my uncle's voice, and he said, you just write the story how you want, and he says, and just remember that you're part of the story. And that was so profound. And from that point on, I think I was on, the screenplay is 144 pages, and I think I was on page 30. It was incredible. I blinked, and that thing was done. I mean, it was like somebody else wrote that thing. I was good. Not even there. I was lost. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so that there it is. So.
Well, we got Chris. He's been waiting patiently to ask you a question.
Hi, Chris.
And after he asks you a question, we're going to take a small break.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, my question is, I said, my question is for Chad, outside of working on this movie that you're trying to get made, what are some hobbies that you like to do for fun outside of work?
Well, right now I've become, just because out of self-preservation, I've become a health nut. I mean, what I do is I work out in the gym. I work out every day. I take long walks with my two wonderful best friends, Chase and Chance. They're two wonderful Great Danes. I go to the beach, and of course I've got a lovely wife I've been married to for 39 years, and it's just been pure heaven. I'm one of the luckiest guys on the face of the planet to have a woman that could put up with this UFO contactee nutcase, and she's been right there with me. So, I work during the, as far as this, but that's pretty much what I do. I love movies and I love movie history, and of course I've gotten involved with that and what have you. I've got an encyclopedic mind for all this stuff. So I watch a lot of movies, and so that's pretty much it. Other than that, I just that's about it. That's just about it. It seems kind of boring.
It seems like, Chad, we're going to have to get you back here again because I wanted to ask you about UFOs, unidentified submerged objects. And we're down to seconds because, you know, talking to you is so enlightening and so much to talk about that you can't do it in one or two shows, you know, because now we're running down like 12 seconds.
Okay. I'll come back.
Okay, because I'm going to make you come back because I ain't finished with my questions. And so on
okay.
that note, Mark and Chris, let's say goodbye to our guests, and we'll see him when
Thank
we bring
you.
Him back.
Goodbye.
We can finish the show.
Bye, Mark. Bye, Chris. Thank you. Love you all. Love you all.
I love you, guys.
Love you, too.
Thank you for your time, darling.
We just scratched the surface. Okay.
I can't believe we're running out of time, so I'll get you back again, darling. And on that note, next week I want to be here listening to Mark tell about how when he was young, someone took advantage of him and put him in dirty magazines, and he's going to come out with the real scoop. So stay with us next week to hear Mark tell it all. But you know, when you point fingers at people, you got to really point back at you. And on that note, we're out of here. Everybody, have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend,
week.
Everybody.
Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome, baby.